Thank you so very much for joining us this evening. This is Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, and we are conducting our Teletown Hall meeting on the subject of the economy and health insurance and its relationship to that. We appreciate your joining us, and to make the best use of the time, let me say is health insurance reform legislation is crafted in various congressional committees in the House and Senate. I wanted to report back to you on this work in progress, solicit your comments and opinions, and provide additional information you might find helpful. We have a website that you can go to also, and I'll give you that, www.kaptur.house.gov, or our phone number in the district is 419-259-7500. We're there during the week all the time to answer your questions, get you information, and our office will also be mailing to all of you, the thousands of people who have contacted us, letters and supplementary material to address your questions, to try to answer your concerns. Excuse me. This evening, I've also asked two preeminent experts to join us, one from the district, one from Washington, from our region, Dr. Ken Burtka, a family physician in Ohio, who's a member also of the National Board of Directors of the American Academy of Family Physicians, an organization of over 94,000 family physicians, residents, and students, and I expect Dr. Burtka will be the president of that organization before long. I thank him for his time this evening. And then from Washington, Mr. Wendell Primus, the senior policy advisor to the U.S. House of Representatives on this legislation. And he is also has his ear to the ground and pencil to paper right there in Washington as we speak tonight, working in the House, but also very aware of what is happening in the Senate. As we proceed, we will open for questions, but let me just briefly describe to you the health insurance challenges that citizens have repeatedly spoken to me about that influence my views on this issue. And my desire is to help all the American people afford quality health care that yields better patient outcomes, makes our healthcare system higher performing, and one where no one has to worry about going bankrupt because they get sick. I'm going to list the 11 major concerns that people have come to us with, and then we will open it up for questions. Very briefly, these are the concerns constituents express repeatedly. Number one, that there are insurance coverage exclusions for persons with pre-existing conditions. Number two, the cost and quality of insurance available to small business, self-employed persons, and the general public. Number three, insurance portability between jobs. Number four, the rising and uncontrollable cost of prescription drugs. Number five, the donut hole, or Part D of Medicare, for pharmaceutical costs for older adults and people with disabilities enrolled in Part D, which are the private drug plans. The cost, number six, the cost of medical care for people who are uninsured being shifted to insured Americans, thus increasing their rates. Number seven, the cost of catastrophic illness. Number eight, the rising amounts hospitals and healthcare providers must pay for uncompensated care that are then shifted to others who hold insurance. Number nine, the limitations on choice of doctors and care providers. Number 10, the yearly or lifetime caps on what insurance covers. And finally, from a business and government standpoint, as employers, the rising costs of care to them. I appreciate your listening to this brief introduction, and we will be pleased to take your comments and questions at this point. And again, thank you for taking time out of your evening to join us.
The first question we want to go to, Congresswoman, is from Linda Gantz, and she has a question about the Delphi retirees.
Okay.
Hi, Congressman Kaptur.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for joining us.
I was wondering if you were aware of the situation with Delphi and if you have fought for the retirees and if there's anything else that can be done because we have lost our health and life insurance and now our pensions are going to the PBGC. And my husband has serious health problems, and it has really hurt. And I was wondering if you had tried to fight for us in Congress. I know there is a lawsuit that the DSRA has against Michigan, and we are waiting to see the results of that. We could just use all the help we can get here.
Well, I really appreciate your
fighting for us.
In the recent recovery bill, Linda, you know, there was a provision for COBRA for those workers who had been terminated at plants where the government would pick up as part of the recovery bill about 65% of COBRA expenses. I don't know whether the situation at Delphi in your particular case would apply, but we would certainly be honored to work with you on that. In addition to that, in the legislation that we are considering in the Congress, you would not be without an insurance plan. Right now, you're in a situation where you've been terminated. You would have other options in the through what's called the Health Insurance Exchange. And there are so many people, particularly in our region of the country, who are uninsured right now. Many who, like yourselves, have worked their entire lives. And I can give you a number. Just in our region, we have 56,000 constituents in the 9th Congressional District with no insurance at all. But please call our office, 419-259-7500, and we'll try to do what we can to help you in your current circumstance.
Thank you. I want to remind callers, if they want to ask a question for Congresswoman Kaptur, please dial *3 on your telephone. Congresswoman, the next question we have comes from Terry Burke, and she has a question about whether she would lose her insurance under the current proposal. Go ahead, Ms. Burke.
Hello, Congresswoman Kaptur. Good evening.
Hi,
how are you?
Thank you for joining us. Good. Thank you for calling. Which county are you in, Carrie?
Terry, I'm in Nutsford, Ohio, Lucas County.
Okay.
Yes. I have a question. If you currently have health insurance, I know there's a lot of stories going around about eventually this is going to turn into a single-payer plan, government-run health care for everyone. I think that's scaring a lot of people, especially if they have insurance. If you could give me any thoughts on that, and also the cost. Will they be able to handle the cost of universal health care, and will it mean a taxing increase on middle-class Americans?
Okay, good question. I'll have Wendell help me on this one, too, from the Washington end. The plan basically is if you like your plan, keep it. But if you don't like it or you don't have any insurance, the bill being developed will provide additional insurance options to you through a health insurance exchange. Those plans will be private. The additional plan that is being discussed is a not-for-profit plan that others could join, but there are great disincentives in the bill to allow, let's say, businesses to dump patients into that plan. And those incentives are being negotiated as this bill works its way through. But if you like your plan, keep it. I ran into a lady the other day in Holland, Ohio, and she said, I don't want to be in that government plan. I said, you don't have to be, ma'am. I said, you keep what you have if you like it. And that is fundamental because we have a 50-state insurance system, and the goal of this is to give you choice, to give you more choices than you have today. Wendell, did you want to comment at all at this point?
And you will be provided, if you don't have employer-provided insurance, you can go into the exchange. How much you have to pay will be capped on a sliding scale depending upon your income. And the idea is that every American will be able to afford health insurance.
Thank you.
And there's no attempt to move to a single-payer system here.
We want to move on to another call. We'll go to now over to Lorain, Ohio. And this call, Congresswoman, comes from Myron Mager. Go ahead, sir.
It's Richard Mager. seeing
Sorry, Richard Major.
Yes. Congresswoman, seeing as how this plan is so highly touted, I would like to know when you're going to go on it.
Well, sir, right now, I would have that option. If I don't like the insurance I have now, which is the Blue Cross Blue Shield standard option, as a federal employee, I could opt to go into that plan if it provided benefits that were, you know, better than what I have now. And federal workers have a choice of over 400 plans that they can select among. The one I have picked is not the richest plan, that's for sure. And at this point, I don't know what that new plan might offer, but I could look at it, that's for sure.
Okay. The next caller is from Lucas County, Crystal Rowlett. I'm sorry if I get a pronunciation wrong. Crystal, go ahead.
Yes. Ms. Kaptur, I was just kind of concerned about the healthcare workers, you know, how this all this change affects us in the long run. I mean, we don't have the greatest healthcare insurance ourselves. However, I'm just wondering if anything changes to the respect, you know, as far as our employment goes or our salaries or pensions or anything like that.
Well, you know what's interesting about that question, Crystal? First of all, thanks for being interested in how this affects the entire system. Under the House bill right now, so many hospitals and healthcare providers have to take care of uncompensated care, which affects salaries. You know, when you get an institution that is taking care of people who have no insurance, somebody has to pay for that. And sometimes that comes out of lower salaries. That comes out of a stress on benefits for those who work in the healthcare professions. And just for our region, it's estimated that healthcare providers and hospitals would get a payment of over $120 million each year in care for the costs that are currently labeled as uninsured. So there would be more dependability in terms of their income stream because of cost savings in other places in the system. I think I'm going to ask either Dr. Burtka or Mr. Primus to comment at this point if they wish.
Dr. Burtka, I'd like to comment. Crystal, I can tell you that here in Toledo and the last caller from Lorraine, I know in both those areas, both in hospitals and in physician offices, where we're increasingly seeing patients without insurance who have lost their insurance, it's caused cutbacks. You know, so the irony is having to make the decision between whether we're going to continue to see patients, and in order to do that, to have to actually cut back on office staff and cut back expenses. And I personally know of physician offices that have done that, and I think it's pretty public information just reading the newspapers that the hospitals have had to cut back employees just to continue to see the patients they're trying to serve.
The next caller, Congresswoman Kaptur, has a question about, it's a little bit, it's not on healthcare, it's on tax policy. It's a call from Lenny Space.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, Lenny. Hello.
Yes, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling in.
Fine. Lenny Spates? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was calling trying to get some information, you know, that might help all middle class, really. Are you there?
I'm there.
Okay. Yeah. Years ago, Reagan cut out the interest that you was allowed to deduct as far as, just say, for instance, if you had a car, you pay an interest on it, which most people do, or a credit card or a loan or anything like that, the interest payments that you pay on it there, a lot of people be wanting to know, if you can't deduct it and you're paying it, where is it really going? And maybe they should, you know, think about revising that there, because that was a way of helping middle-class people who, you know, who's not so rich that they can use a or have an equity in their house just to be able to take a loan or so. And that seemed to be the only way that you can deduct some of this interest. But before that, before the Reagan canceled that, that was a lot of help to people on their taxes and so forth. So I think that's a good way of basically helping all middle class. And I wonder what your thoughts on that is.
Well, Lenny, I think you brought up a very good point. When you think about benefits to the individual, if you look at the recent legislation we passed for first-time home ownership, that $8,500 tax credit has caused homes to be sold across our region. And then recently, the Cash for Clunkers has caused additional cars to be sold because the benefit went directly to the individual. I think what we're trying to do with health insurance as we work toward a solution here is to make it beneficial to the average citizen. And the ideas that you have suggested, I will take back to the Ways and Means Committee. Perhaps Wendell knows if there are bills bubbling up in that committee concerning that. But I think what you're talking about is empowering the consumer rather than spending these trillions of dollars on the Wall Street banks that then don't really share any of that or make credit available across our system, and it's really freezing up our economy from coast to coast. But I will certainly take those ideas back, and I don't know, Wendell, if you know if those bills are a part of this discussion in any way, but it makes eminent sense to me.
No, they're not part of this discussion. I mean, this bill is really focused on making sure that all Americans have quality, affordable health care.
Our next caller is Mr. Robert Scott. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Congressman. A couple questions on the health care. One is, have you actually read the entire bill to see what's in it and how it works? And if so, is it true that the government will be able to access bank accounts without notification for payments of services? And is there anything in there that says that illegal aliens will be able to get free coverage from the government?
Good questions. And, yes, we've read the bill many times, and there's more than one bill. And it's changing because language is being worked on in the three separate committees. First of all, no non-citizen can get benefit under this bill. And the bill explicitly states it will not provide coverage for illegal immigrants. You can go to page 143, section 246 on that one. And I have to say the Senate bill I have not read because I'm waiting for something to be completed over there. And in the House bill, I'm not satisfied with several of the provisions, but I'm making my views known, and we'll see if they make any difference.
I would like to remind callers, if they wish to ask a question to Congresswoman Kaptur, we have several people in line, but please don't hesitate. Dial *3 on your telephone keypad, and we'll try to get to as many calls as possible. The next caller is from Toledo. Her name is Karen Kraus.
Hello. Congresswoman, I am somewhat familiar with the language in H.R. 3200 as it was first drafted and passed by the first two committees. What I want to ask is, what can we do to assist you in helping the public better understand this legislation and perhaps assist you in gaining passage?
Well, thank you very much for calling in, Karen, and appreciate the offer of assistance. I think that as I look at the what citizens are asking me when I'm out all over the region, they're asking me questions. And because the bill is so big, that creates its own complexity for the ordinary citizen who's worried about getting to work, getting a job if they're out of work. They don't have time to spend on all of this. So I would say that there's an anxiety that really comes from the shape that the economy is in. And so they're very worried about doing something that will in any way make it more difficult for people to float their boat in this economy. So I think that health insurance and all the debate that surrounded it creates a rather daunting challenge. And there's a lot of misinformation out there also, that It's true that the insurance companies that have been operating in the 50 states and sometimes having monopolies in given markets, and the pharmaceutical companies are uncomfortable. And they are putting up a fight to try to avoid any change. I think it's important for the listeners to understand that in our country today, if we want to talk about economic growth, 17% of our economy is devoted to the health industry, all the different dimensions. That is double what is spent in all Western democracies that have a standard of living equal or better than our own. Take Switzerland, take Germany, take France, and you say to yourself, why is that? And one of the reasons is that there are some exorbitant profits being made across this system. If you look at the cost of pharmaceuticals, for example, in the bill, there is language that encourages negotiations for the price of those pharmaceuticals, like bulk buying. When you buy things in bulk, it's cheaper. I'm not happy with the fact that the language reads encourage. I want to require those negotiations so we can get the best price for those pharmaceuticals rather than forcing the public to pay these exorbitant prices all the time. I want money to be there for research on medications, of course, but there are some pretty exceptional profits being made. The pharmaceutical industry is now the third most profitable industry in this country, and we know who they're getting profitable off of, and they don't manufacture most of those drugs here. So each part of the bill has its own set of complexities, and I think if you go to our website, if you help to calm people's fears as we go around, I know I met with a large group of small business people the other day, met with seniors today. We're going to different organizations, veterans, explaining that if, you know, they keep veterans' health care, that's theirs under the House bill. And as we meet with each group, I think we're able to answer their questions. And because we don't have a finished product, it still is a work in progress, so people can impact the bill.
Congressman, we've had over 2,000 people call in, and we have approximately 400 people on the line. So we want to ask everybody to be patient. We appreciate this overwhelming response to our telephone town hall. Again, if you want to ask Congresswoman Kaptur a question, please dial *3. The next caller is from Port Clinton, Raleigh Walters. One second. I'm sorry, we're going to go to a different call. I'm sorry. Lori DeShetler from Maumee. Go ahead, Ms. DeShetler.
Hi, Congresswoman. Hope you can understand me. I'm about an hour out of getting out of the hospital with my problem here. My question is, I'm going through a divorce, and I'm going to be losing my health insurance, and now I've been diagnosed with Bell's palsy, so it'll be a pre-existing condition, and I'd never be able to afford COBRA, not getting support or anything. Well, what are my options? You know, is there going to be put a cap on how much COBRA is going up to? Years ago is so much less, and what does somebody like me do?
Well, first of all, Lori, thank you very much for calling in. Under this legislation, first of all, you can call our office. All of our listeners can do that, or just email our office. Our phone is 419-259-7500. If I can't get with each one of you tonight personally, we are contacting every person that has contacted our small staff. There's 700,000 citizens, and there's, you know, a few of us, so it takes a bit of effort. But we will try to deal with your situation as best we can to see what other programs you might be eligible for. If we had this kind of reform, you would not be without insurance. And as you were asking your question, Dr. Bertko was just shaking his head, and I think he wants to say something here. Doctor, did you want to comment?
Yes. It you know, I hear this from patients all the time. I see it. If I was talking to someone today who is was seeing me for something else, but at the end of the visit almost started crying because she's afraid she's losing her job, and similar situation, doesn't know how she's going to afford it. I don't have the answer for you today, but I would definitely urge you to speak to your physician because I know physicians are trying to do what we can do. But it, as the Congresswoman, I think, was saying, if this, if reform was in place, you wouldn't, number one, there'd be a safety net there. Number two, pre-existing condition would absolutely not keep you from getting insurance. That's a major problem in the U.S. when we have tied insurance to what job you have, who your employer is, and then furthermore, the insurance has said if you change insurances, then you can be excluded. At the end of the day, the care still needs to be given. The cost is still going to be borne. So we see someone lose their insurance because of a pre-existing condition, and instead of being taken care of in a physician's office for something that's under $100, they end up in an emergency room, which is going to be significantly more, 2, 3, 4 times as more, and worse yet, maybe they come even later. So at the end of the day, we all still have to bear that cost somehow. Unfortunately, right now it's getting pushed later to when things are worse or to a more expensive setting. And that's one of the fundamental purposes of healthcare reform is to give people comprehensive, ongoing care at the level they need, at whatever that level is. If it's a phone call, if it's an email, if it's a physician office visit, if it's an emergency room, the important thing is it should be covered, and it should be covered early in the process. Better yet is prevention, which we really do a poor job of now in terms of covering. So I feel, you know, very bad for you, and again, I would urge you to speak with your personal physician because there may be some things that he or she can actually help you out with.
You can always call our office, too, and we will refer you to medical resources within the region. We'll have to check your particular insurance, and each case is different, okay?
Now we go back to Mr. Walters, Raleigh Walters in Clinton. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call, Congressman.
Happy to do it, sir.
Chapter. I keep hearing these horror stories about what's going to happen to Medicare. Our family, we're on Medicare now, and we have a Medicare Advantage plan, and I hear that the politicians would like to get rid of that also. So what is your response to that?
Well, first of all, I've always been a supporter of Medicare, and literally it's a life and death issue. Without Medicare and Medicaid, where would this, as one of my dear advisors said to me today, God help us all, if they did not exist. So in this bill, sir, what we try to do is strengthen Medicare, not weaken Medicare. For example, what happens, and a doctor said to me just the other day, you know, when you don't do colonoscopies, when somebody's 55 years old, and then 10 years later they end up on Medicare and they have full-blown cancer, the costs to Medicare are substantial. In the reforms that this proposal anticipates, with better preventive care, we would deal with that person earlier and prevent illness to save Medicare money. In terms of the way we negotiate for prescription drugs, we can squeeze a lot of excess out of the system and put those dollars toward care. And that is something that I think will benefit not just seniors, but everybody across the system. Right now in this bill, the donut hole, where seniors have to pay several thousand dollars once they reach that threshold, it's about $3,500 or somewhere in there. They have to pay between that and around $5,500, $6,000. For 7,600 seniors in our area, that worry would be eliminated. And so what we're trying to do in the bill is to move dollars around to where they're really needed and take the excess costs out of the system. I wanted to ask Wendell in Washington if he wants to comment on Medicare Advantage and add anything to what I've said.
The only thing I would add, Congresswoman, is that there is no attempt to get rid of Medicare Advantage. Right now, Medicare Advantage actually gets more government reimbursement than fee-for-service, and the attempt is to level the playing field. And as the Congresswoman said, benefits are actually improved in the program. The hospital insurance part of the program, the life of it, the solvency of it is lengthened, and the donut hole will eventually be closed completely.
The next call, Congresswoman, is on a different subject. It's about green energy in Toledo, and the caller is Greg Wiener.
I'm on.
Hello, Greg.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Wiener. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to ask the Congresswoman about what she's doing to encourage the economy in the green energy in Northwest Ohio in regard to solar panel production in Toledo and the wind farm just south of Bowling Green.
Thank you for calling in, sir. My staff tells me that I have to answer the question shorter. Sometimes it's hard to do. On green energy and solar, we are one of three leaders in the entire hemisphere now. It's taken a quarter century of effort in federal research and development out at the University of Toledo working with companies. And also we stand on the shoulders of those who developed the physics of glass over the last 100 years in this community. I'm very proud of what we're contributing to the world, and we are going to launch more companies. And in the area of wind energy, if we can get our shipyard up to snuff, which is our top Recovery Act project, we hope to be able to make some of those wind turbine assembly units right here. So believe me, green energy is in top priority for me. We've been working on it for a very long time. America's energy dependence is our chief strategic vulnerability. And so thank you so very much for calling in. And I'm very excited at what we've done thus far. I think the changes being made in Washington are also helping us. We have a long way to go, but there's no question this community's efforts at sustainability have been nationally recognized now.
We want to remind people that they will be able to leave a voice message at the end of this telephone town hall. So if we don't get to your questions, we still have 310 people on the line. We've had approximately 2,200 people participate at some point or another. We want to go now to Dennis Moliseski with a question about pensions. Go ahead, sir.
Marcy, first of all, I'd like to tell a couple comments and then a question really important, and please let your staff have a little patience. We'd like to tell you at Local 14 and the UAW across the country how much we love you because you did so much for us, and we love you. The second thing is people don't realize
in the United States. We love you. You have the best plant in America.
Thank you. People don't realize in the United States that I myself, over 30 years, have paid the federal government $500,000 in taxes, and now after 30 years, my body being crippled, along with a million other auto workers, we have to worry about our pensions. My question to you is, can you and the good people in our Congress, before we pay anything else back, can we fund that pension fund so we're not cut short in this? Because our pension fund is underfunded.
Yes, that's because of what's happened in the automotive market. We tried to do the best that we could do.
You did good, but you did great. But is there any way we can fund that pension fund before, you know, we do other things with the money? That's what I'm saying. Can we take a look at that?
I'm happy to take a look at it, and I can tell you I introduced a bill last Friday to put a 100% excise tax on all those bonuses they gave to those Wall Street firms that, in my opinion, defrauded the American people and then took our public money and enriched themselves again. I think what has happened there is abhorrent, and we have plenty of uses for that money, including for Americans who have pension plans to be made whole. Yours is not the only industry that is facing this. We have faced it in other companies as well. It's just so unfair. And sadly, the UAW did not have a jointly trusteed plan, and I think that affected your ability to have more control. But I can tell you the UAW called me when all this was going on. They said, Marcy, we want to do everything to protect our retirees. And they gave away a lot in order to save what has been saved to date. But there's a lot of inequity in our pension plans across this country, and I'm just so sorry for what has happened. Let's hope that with additional sales and modernization of the industry, new revenues will flow back so some of these can be made whole again.
Thank you. We have approximately 15 minutes left. We want to go now to Bill Began from Toledo. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, Congressman Kaptur, for holding this forum to give us an opportunity to learn more about what's going on. As you've indicated, there are three versions of the bill, and I'm not sure which one this was in, but I've heard that they're going to require senior citizens to have end-of-life counseling. Now, I find that very offensive. Is it even true?
Well, sir, some of the people that don't support the bill are putting out what I would call a lot of half-truths about what's in the bill and what isn't in the bill. We'll be happy to send you language about the section that they are misinterpreting. And the only language in the bill that deals with this just encourages, if you're in a plan, for you to talk about this with your physician. Dr. Bertka and I had a conversation about this earlier, Doctor. Why don't you reassure the caller?
Yeah, the and I've read this section of the bill a couple times. What it does is it actually allows Medicare to pay for end-of-life counseling for those patients who want it. And that's one of the problems in Medicare now is Medicare doesn't pay well for counseling and lots of things. End-of-life counseling is very important, but there's nothing in the bill that mandates it. It's up to the patient and his or her physician within their relationship if they want to talk about that. Many people find it very helpful to talk about those kind of things before the patient's actually in a situation and the family doesn't know, you know, what the patient would want done.
The next caller is from Lorain County, Aaron Byrne in Wellington. Go ahead, Aaron.
Thank you. Congresswoman, I'm first very concerned as a student of history and political science at how few people, citizens and in Washington, seem to have read the document written by James Madison. I'm very concerned that this health care plan, along with other issues that have gone through Congress, are downright unconstitutional. Well, with that being said, since we can't seem to stop this, my question tonight is, why is it that the bills do not address the problem of defensive medicine in addressing trial lawyers and how they can sue endlessly for these things that then, in fact, cost us money by doctors having to practice this defensive medicine?
All right. Well, first of all, we have the bills on our website. We can all read them. We can go to different sections. We all have to be vigilant and do our best. On the medical liability issue, when I left Washington a few days ago, I was speaking with one of the lawyers in the House who has been working on the language, and he was actually tasked with that issue. So it's not like it isn't being thought about. I don't know what the Senate is doing, but it's not like it's not being talked about. There is something going on. Those aren't my home committees, but this issue has come before the Congress in different forms before. I have voted for various measures. I don't know, Wendell, if you know if anything is prepared to be placed in the bill in the form of amendment in either the House or the Senate bills, but I'd ask you to comment at this point. It is an issue that is being recognized. I just don't know whether it will be allowed in the form of an amendment or as a part of any of the measures that are moving through committees.
The only thing I would add is that the president himself is very interested in this, and when he talked to the AMA in Chicago, he mentioned it. So it very much is in the dialogue here. There's no language in H.R. 3200 that addresses this issue per se, but it is getting a lot of attention.
Brenda Young is a caller from Toledo, I believe. Go ahead, Ms. Young.
Hello, thank you. Congressman.
Speak up, please.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is, my son was working for the training associate, and he was a contract trainer. And that job ended, and he recently had an illness. He was sick, and he went to the emergency room, but he doesn't have insurance. And he was given prescription prescriptions to have filled, and with no insurance, we couldn't fill them. And I was wondering, is there any, do you know of any organization that would help?
You know, all right, well, first of all, you can, ma'am, you can call our office at 419-259-7500. There are neighborhood health centers around this community that do have pharmaceuticals available on a sliding fee scale. Many times we can also call the companies to try to help you and figure out what your own situation is. And so we can deal with his situation that way. But you said something critical. You said when he became ill, you went to the emergency room. That is the most expensive form of care. You need a medical home that is not as expensive that can provide him with the kind of preventive care and medical care that he needs. And we certainly want to try to help you find that.
The next caller
is... Neighborhood Health Association, by the way, the phone number for the Neighborhood Health Association is 419-720-7883.
The next caller is John Schwab. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening, Marcy. This is John Schwab.
Hi, John.
Thank you for holding this forum. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in and taking the time.
My concern with the bills is, with the current bill in the House, are the unintended or maybe intended consequences. What I envision happening is I work for a small business with a payroll above $50,000, so our business would be, we would have to comply with these rules under these bills. It seems to me that it would be cheaper for our business to pay the tax and dump the employees onto the government system. And that's what I'm really concerned about is, and it seems like we're rushing through this bill with a lot of things that haven't been thought about, the unintended or, like I said, potentially intended consequences, that even the CBO has said it isn't going to do what it was intended to do anyhow. So I guess I'm looking for assurance that someone is paying attention to those, to what's going to happen when this bill passes.
First of all, I appreciate your calling in because this is exactly the kind of action and consequence discussion that we need to have in the Congress, and I think it's the reason that we're struggling to do it right. It's one of the reasons I was one of those arguing that we didn't need to pass something fast, but we needed to pass something right. In terms of small business, we have about 27 million of the 47 million Americans without health insurance who work for small business, either as owners or workers. And I can tell you, as a child growing up in this community, our father and mother had to sell their small business because our dad became ill. And he was forced to go to work at then Kaiser Jeep to provide health insurance for his wife and children. I will never, ever forget that. And I am determined as a member of Congress to cover small business, all right? Because I know what it did to our family. It broke our father's heart to sell that business. And so I want to get it right for small business. There are enormous opportunities in this bill for small business. And when you mentioned, sir, 50 million, 50, what was the payroll size?
And he said 50,000 is the limit.
50,000
is
500,000. Do you surpass, might I ask, 300,000?
He's no longer on the line.
Oh.
So it must be over 500,000. That's the cutoff for small business.
Okay. But I've been meeting with the small business community in order to try to clarify and to understand whether they're comfortable with this. And because there are a lot of small businesses that have insurance that are satisfied with their plans. Most of them that I meet don't like them because they're too expensive, they have too many exclusions, or they can't get insurance, period, particularly those that have 3 to 10 employees. So I hope he calls back in. I hope we have his phone number because I want to do something more with small business because I really want to tailor this section so it's perfect.
Yeah, we can give you his number for follow-up, Congresswoman.
Okay.
We have approximately 6 or 7 minutes left. We thank people for staying on. We still have almost 300 people on the line. And I want to remind everybody that they can ask a question on the voicemail at the end of the call if we don't get to your call. I want to go now to Mary Zawiza in Toledo. Again, apologize for a mispronunciation of a surname. Go ahead, ma'am.
Well, you did a great job with the name.
Thanks.
Good evening, Congressman Marcy.
Hi, Mary. Good evening.
How are you?
Good.
I'm proud of you doing this. This is great.
I'd like to be on for 5 hours, but I'd wear you all out.
I know. You'll need town hall meetings for this. We sit at our lunch hours talking about this. I work for a hospital. And some of the questions they were raising is, are we going to be able to change doctors as freely as we do now? And are there going to be long lines waiting maybe for tonsillectomies and surgeries, like maybe they could be put off for 6 months to a year because of a waiting list?
I'll tell you, that's one I haven't heard. So I'm glad that you're calling in and asking the question. The idea here is that you would be able to have a choice of insurance plans that would be much better managed, and that you would have a choice of doctors and care providers. So the inherent competition in the system, what's available on the exchange, would help you to have a better managed system, one where resources were not. If you work in a hospital, you know how many people go in the emergency room, right? And you know how much that costs. So the idea here is to better manage those health resources and to better manage through the plan that you choose the benefits that you wish to access. In addition to that, because of the payments going to the providers at the hospital, those involved in the medical system, hopefully these pressures that are on you right now because of the way that we spend our dollars rather inefficiently as a society will actually go to care. The idea is to get you better care at more affordable prices. Dr. Bertko, did you want to comment on that?
Just on a different piece of it, but the idea of getting into your doctor, one of the things that all the health care reform bills that are out there now, one of their cornerstones is to help increase the workforce of primary care physicians, family physicians, general pediatricians, general internists. And as the representative said, with the hope that everyone can have a patient-centered medical home. And that's very important. We have an imbalance in this country right now where a lot of people are having trouble even getting a family physician, and all the bills help encourage medical students to go into family medicine.
We have
one point, Steve, if I could. For small business, if we have small business on the line, 95.9% of small business owners would be completely unaffected by proposals in the bill, but would benefit from the insurance reforms in the bill. I just wanted to mention that because they comprise such a sizable proportion of those Americans who have no health insurance.
We apologize. We haven't been able to get to everybody's call, but it's really impressive. We still have 250 people on the line. We've had well over 2,000 people call in. I think we probably have time for only one more question, Congresswoman. I want to give that question to gentleman Mr. Clark, and he has a question that's about runaway spending financed by China. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, Representative Kaptur. I'm very concerned on a national level that we have runaway spending. Our national debt is something over $10 trillion. That's 12 zeros. That's T, trillion dollars. And it seems like we spend willy-nilly, and then China and Japan pick up our paper. We just have to quit this.
Sir, this has been my worry since the 1980s. When I first went to Alan Greenspan and urged him to sell the U.S. debt to the American people in small denominations, even at postal stations where they could buy it like postal savings stamps, and he looked at me as some kind of curiosity that arrived at the national level, because he said he preferred to deal with his 20 bond houses up on Wall Street, and I got the picture real clearly back then. And what we back then, we only had 8% of the federal debt bought by foreign interests. Now it's well over half, and we are spending hundreds of billions of dollars annually to pay our lenders. I agree with you, and a lot of these lenders now have hidden owners. For instance, if a Chinese sovereign wealth fund is buying our bonds, how do we know who they are? And they surely don't share our political values. So we have to get our country back, in my opinion, being independent again. And if we look at recent history, as of 2000, we cheered in the Congress because we balanced the budget annually, and we were paying down the long-term debt. We were down to about $5 trillion, which is a huge amount of money. It's almost triple that today. So I've been a part of a responsible Congress. I honestly believe if it hadn't been for Ross Perot, we never would have balanced that budget because he gave a wake-up call to both political parties, and I thank him for what he did. But now we face an even worse situation, conducting two wars without paying for them, and now this horrendous recession precipitated by the implosion in the housing sector, and we're still not dealing with that. We're acting like it doesn't even exist. All these bills they passed in Congress didn't make any difference in terms of mortgage workouts by these companies that are walking away with the taxpayers' money and not loosening credit across this society. So we have a series of issues that are impacting the deficit very seriously. I completely agree with you. You can go to our website and see plenty about that. And what we're trying to do, I'm a member of the Budget Committee, we're trying to exert some discipline. It's hard to do. We pass PAYGO, where we have to pay for everything that we pass, but in a recession, you can't make it worse. And so we have a very tender situation that we're trying to live through at the moment. But our family used to teach us it isn't how much you make, it's how much you save. And our society forgot that about 15 years ago, back in the 80s, when our 20 years ago, when we changed our laws to encourage debt and to diminish savings. And we are paying a very serious price for it now. So that's a whole other conversation. And I know that they're saying to me that our time on this Teletown meeting is over. Just so the citizens know, maybe this was explained to you, we contacted every person who has telephoned our office, written our office, emailed our office, as best we could if they left us a forwarding number. And we also randomly sampled across the district thousands and thousands of people from the Secretary of State's website. And so many of the people who tuned in had never contacted us, but we wanted their opinions as well. And we will reach deeper with each succeeding effort that we make. And I thank you also very much for listening. I want to thank Dr. Burtka. I want to thank Wendell Primus for joining us in Washington. It's very late there now. And we thank them both for their time and for all of you. We're there for you. We're here to listen and to do what's right for you and for the country. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. And remind everybody they can leave a message after the end of the call. Thank you, everybody, for participating.